and welcome to episode 565 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. A spicy weekend, which excited to dive into. So many comments over the weekend.
It was Worlds this weekend, and it was an interesting week of Magic events, and that's what we're going to be talking about today, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. We got another co-host in Krim. Good morning, Krim. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fresh back from Houston from a pretty big tournament, so it was fun.
Yeah, it looked like I was seeing on my Twitter a lot of Magic people were playing in the Riftbound tournament. I saw like Eli Eldrazi was like undefeated day one or something and super hype. So it was cool to see people having a fun time.
It was like the big Super Smash Bros, but like of TCG pros. Like there was like TCG pros from every game there, and it was like really funny.
It sounds fun. So today we're gonna be talking mostly about Worlds. It was Worlds this weekend. We got decks, we got metagame stuff, we got win rates, we have drama. We got some drama, of course, from Worlds. So we're talking all things Worlds, maybe a little bit of like Marvel spoiler news at the end, some fish mail question, but basically all podcasts, we're going to be going over everything you need to know about Worlds. Before we get into it, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, and Card Conduit's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service fee to send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more. It pays just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show is also brought to you by Heavy Play Advanced Gaming Equipment. The RFG Deckbox Max features a clear window to showcase your commander while protecting your deck. Available in three different sizes to fit all of your decks, including standard and commander decks, the EquipMag system lets you attach an optional dice box and even multiple decks together. And you can head over to heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish or just use the code MTGGoldfish at checkout to save 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for the supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic, and let's start with Worlds. This was the big event of the weekend, the culmination of the year of 2025 in Magic. So this was a tournament that was Avatar Draft, Standard Construction, Constructed, and we kicked things off with, I guess I would say, kind of a surprising metagame. When the metagame came out, we found out that at the top of the meta, and I'm not one to say I told you so, but is it Lessons? Number one most played deck in the field. Perhaps a deck that I've been really high on ever since spoiler season. Richard, tell us more about this meta. What did it look like on day one?
Seth, everything changed when the Otter Nation attacked, but it was okay because we took it back. Okay. So the top eight. 7 Storm Chaser talent decks. 4 Is It Lessons, 2 Teemer Otters, 1 Is It Looting. Those are all 4 Storm Chaser talents, 4 Boomerangs. Okay. Turns out Boomerang is this town ain't big enough. And Boomerang is kind of the key that makes Accumulate Wisdom, Ancestral Recall, right? That and Grand, right? We were talking about, okay, you know, the red removal lessons, pretty good. But then you need like another lesson to make your Ancestral Recall go off. And the Boomerang and the Otter is the secret to that, right? Yep. And then the last deck in the top 8, Saltai Reanimator.
What a hero.
Snuck in there, got blasted immediately out of the top 8, but that's okay. in terms of metagame percentages, so it was like, what, like 120-something players, right? So it was bigger than the old Worlds format. 52% of decks on Storm Chaser's talent, 38% of decks on Badger Mole Cub, right? So the Cub was still there. Everyone was gunning for the Cub. But the real winner out of all this, I think, is just Is It Shell. No white decks in the top 8, period. 1 black deck in Saltai Reanimator. The rest were the Teemer colors. So that's
1 non-Spire Bluff Canal deck.
And then the winner of the tournament was Is It Lessons in an Is It Lessons a mirror match. And Grand 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 putting in work.
Grand Grand.
Like, literal Ancestral Recall, right? With Grand Grand on the field. Like, accumulate wisdom is literally Ancestral Recall. One mana, draw three.
It's so funny. It's so funny with the Izzet Lessons deck. So the Izzet Lesson deck, most played deck, also most represented in the top eight, but not everyone actually figured out how to build the deck. There is someone named Optimus Tom, I believe. Optimus Tom TV, that does all these like stat breakdowns of big tournaments, posts them on Twitter and Reddit. Definitely worth following if you're interested in that stuff. But they did a full breakdown of the meta, which included dividing out the lesson decks, because like half the lesson decks, 14 of the lesson decks, we're playing Monument of Endurance in Artist Talent. And then there were also 9 Izzet Lesson decks that kind of look like the one that I played during Early Access. It was using like Eddie Merck Crab and stuff to try to win the game. And it turns out the lesson decks that were not playing Monument were really bad. They won like 44% of the time. However, the Monument decks with Izzet Lessons, 64% non-mirror match win rate, which is yes, it's kind of a smaller tournament than some Pro Tours, but still a ridiculously good win rate. So I think that the players that figured out how strong Monument of Endurance is with the lesson package were the ones that really were rewarded, and that was what we saw win the tournament. What do you think about this, Grubba? What do you think about this Izzet domination, this meta?
Well, time to go on the Apology World Tour. I definitely felt like some of these are just uncommons. I was like, okay, cool. I didn't think lessons would pop this hard. And I definitely did not think Grand Grand would be
Grand.
The front, the face of terror for yeah. the entire world's tournament. I will say that I think this is a very interesting thing to see an entire, like, you know, just card mechanic from the recent set just take over entirely. I don't think we've had a set take over that hard in a minute, right?
Yeah.
No. Lessons blown up. So now this definitely confirms Strixhaven's lessons will not be busted. Or if it will be, then we are going to be in a world of hurt. But I think in the last podcast or so, we talked about memeing about how, it's probably just going to win and like, I don't know, a Sultai deck will sneak in there. I don't know.
Yeah.
And we were right in that sense, right? And like, even then, it turns out also looting popped off. There's a lot of cool decks this world, by the way. Like, I know the top eight is all Izzet. Everyone's talking about Izzet. I think it's obviously really sweet to see the fine-tuned versions of Lessons with Endurance being the winner. Seeing Artist Talent, Storm Chaser's Talent, all these talents inside the Lessons decks, I think is really cool. But I hope this doesn't overshadow the really cool decks that showed up at this Pro Tour or Worlds. Like, did you see all of them? Like, yes, I know none of the white decks made it in the top, but like there's the Jeskai decks. There's lots of things going on. There was Golgari Dragons. Like, there was a lot of cool decks this time around, right?
There were a couple cool one-offs, that's for sure. Like, being this small metagame means that some of the decks only had, like, literally one player. But there was, like, Golgari Dragons, I think Ben Stark played, went 6-2 in Constructed with, which I don't know what that means, because I usually think of Ben as, like, a really good Limited player, but apparently Limited did not go well for him this weekend, or else he would have been in the top eight if he, like, did reasonably in drafts, because he crushed Constructed. There was a Jeskai Curse Mirror control deck. There was a really cool, I don't know if you saw, this was on day one. I don't think it made it to,
oh, I did,
to day two, but the one with it was using, Gwen Stacy?
Gwen Stacy.
To reanimate the backside of Gwen Stacy with Shuko, and it actually looked really good on camera in one of the early rounds. So there were some spicy decks that actually performed pretty well. And one of the weird things about this Worlds is it was kind of heavily weighted towards Limited. It had one less round of Standard each day than past Worlds. So you got 3 rounds of Limited, 4 Constructed. So it did mean that if you didn't perform well in Limited, like apparently Ben's Dark, even if you crush it in Constructed, you're not going to make it to the top 8 without posting like a reasonable Limited record. But Richard, what do you make of these decks? Anything spicy stand out to you?
I don't know. Like, is this the metagame or is this just small Japanese tournament? if we brought the graveyard hate, is it Lessons like still like that strong? Seems like people sold out for Badrimal. People playing things like Pyroclasm.
Yes.
Is Iroh's Demonstration good if it's not is it metagame? Like, you know, like 2 mana, 4 damage at sorcery speed, kind of meh, but when you pick off 3 otters with it, kind of crushing it, right? So it's interesting.
And with Grand Grand, it's 1 mana, maybe.
Oh, Grand Grand's a 1/2, though, lives it. Like, disgusting.
Survive. Yeah, but she helps cast it for 1.
Like, what if you play Dimir midrange and pack the graveyard hate? Is it good enough? Like, if you turn off the accumulate wisdoms, if you turn off the combustion techniques, are you cooking? I don't know. So while yes, it looks very Izzet-y, maybe this is just an adjustment to the cub, right? Or maybe the cub gatekeeps everyone, right? Everyone has to respect the cub. You have to bring hate for the cub, and then, you know, you're free to do whatever. So I don't know, but it is only 120 players. They're like, and even though that seems large, once you divide it by teams, the field gets even smaller, right? Because these people come in teams and the teams share the decks and they share their own strategies. So I don't know. This is a small tournament and we'll see where it shakes up. But Storm Chaser talent, that we were talking about the Tiger Seal and Delver. We're like, wait, there's a better Delver. It's the otter that attacks for three and has like more card advantage, like stapled on the back of it. Right, yeah. So no. Like,
wasn't
we
forgot
wasn't about
a
good
place
Storm Chaser talent? It's here.
Doesn't there a ninth place? Is it looting also with Tiger Seals? Like the is it looting shell?
The is it looting shell was
some of them are actually running Tiger Seal.
Yeah, yeah. Like yeah, I think that card's still proven to be good. Right, Tiger Seal is still solid.
Yeah, there were really like three big Izzet decks, right? You had the looting decks, you had the prowess decks, and then you had the lesson decks, and they were all in like the top five most played, top six most played decks at the meta. And I think they still like performed relatively well. If you look at the win rates, like they were fine. They just weren't as good as the lesson, like specifically the team TCG lesson decks. And I want to ask you this, Grim, how much do you think player quality plays into this? Because when I think of team Channel Fireball, team TCG now, it's literally some of the longtime best players in the world, right? Like people who have won worlds in the past, or Seth Mansfield, people always on the pro tour. And they brought like the Monument Lesson deck. They said they thought they broke the format, and it looks like they kind of did break the format. But how much of that is them just being some of the best players in the room? Even at worlds, now that you're up to 130-ish players, it's not like the old worlds where it's like, you know, 20 of just like the top pros of all time. It's a much bigger field. So do you think the fact that it was some of the best players playing this deck that made it have such a great win rate? Or do you expect it to be the same on the ladder too? Is it just that busted of a deck?
I mean, do I think it had to do with potentially some of, like, again, the goats, right? Some of the tournament goats. Yeah, I think player like skill is definitely at play here. And then on like backed behind that, like blue red, this play style of like whether it's looting lessons, any of those kind of play styles, that's exactly what pros love. When you think about like deck play styles. So I think this was just the perfect hand-in-hand, like, deck is solid, player base, or players that are running it and piloting it are going to matter, and I think, yeah, so I think it is heavily behind, like, also, like, the player skill. I also wanted to mention that just because you asked about the Badger Mole Cub, Seth,
yeah,
I think with how much that costs, I think a lot of people are going to still play it no matter how good it is or isn't.
I'm glad you brought that up because I'm very curious what this tournament tells us about Badger Mole Cub. So on one hand, 38% of people registered it on day one. So there were a ton of Badger Mole Cub decks. I also think Richard hit on something where a lot of these decks did seem very prepared. Like people knew that Badger Mole Cub was going to be an issue. And there were a lot of pyroclasms, a lot of Iroh's demonstrations, like a lot of ways to deal with the Cub in these decks, maybe to the detriment of some other matchups. Like Richard said, Graveyard Hate, we saw the Superior Spider-Man deck really overperform because a lot of decks were like kind of cheating on Graveyard Hate, which is something I think we brought up, like you said, last cast. Yeah. We were talking about the possibility that people get too greedy on their Graveyard Hate and you end up with a Superior Spider-Man deck in the top eight. So I think that that shows that Badger Mole Cub did have a huge impact on the decks that people played, their card choices. But if you look at the win rates, the Badger Mole Cub decks did not perform that well. Like, Bant Airbending was like 36% win rate, 34 for non-mirror match win rate, which is maybe, I think it is the worst deck of the entire tournament if you discount the ones that are like one player played. That's
real
bad.
That is the shocking thing, right? Like, I did not expect that drop-off and, like, the fall-off of its win rate for Bant Airbending to be that bad.
And I know that I mean, players, too, because, like, Javier was playing it. Like, some very good people were on the Bant Airbending deck. I do wonder if the mana's part of it. Like, maybe it looks a little better once we get Lorwyn and we get the rest of the Shocklands, because the Izzet mana base is pretty good and the Bant mana base is pretty bad. The other one I wanted to ask about with Badger Mole is Team Marauders. For some reason that I don't understand, the pros love this Otter deck. Like, I feel like this deck performed well once, like, a year ago, and then every time we have a tournament, the pros are just like, yes, we're going to get him with Otters. And it never ends up working out. This time it was 44% win rate. It did put a couple into the top eight, but based on the amount of players on the deck, it didn't do that well. So what do we make of this with Badger Mole Cub, Grim? Does this mean the card's not actually that good? Was the meta just super prepared for it? What do you expect going forward with Badger Mole Cub?
I mean, it just means that the card is strong enough to, like, where we're all taking account, right? We were keeping an eye on it, and it just shows that when you show up and prepared for it, you can beat it, right? And so it shows that it's just a strong green card. Doesn't need, I mean, as of right now, I don't think it needs to be banned. Because I know people were pining for that already, like, a week in, right? And so I think Badger Mole Cub is just a solid card, but not exactly the menace that is, I guess, is it? Because now at this point, I don't know what you're banning out of, is it? And they're getting steam vents.
Yeah. What do you think, Richard?
Seth is talking about good mana. Is it doesn't even have steam vents. But
yeah. True.
But here's the thing, right? Like, the three is it decks in the top eight are vastly different, right? They share the Storm Chaser's talent, but, like, that's kind of where it ends, right? Like, one of them is just running, like, pure uncommons from Avatar The Last Airbender, right? Yep. Like, the looting deck is running what you would think of from the previous shells, right? So, it's really, you kind of ban Boomerang Basics, like, I don't know, Storm Chaser's talent, right? But it's, I don't know, it's just the way the metagame has shaped out. I think the Cub has shown itself to be strong but beatable. But asterisks, like, what does this mean for best of one Magic, right? If most people are playing best of one standard on Arena, like, it doesn't matter what the pros are cooking if you're getting cooked by Badger Mole Cub every round, or your standard match is ending on turn three or turn four. Like, it still doesn't matter if it's balanced, right? Like, but yeah, I don't know. It looks shady, but you can probably beat this deck, right? The difference, so Badger Mole was defeated by Is It Lessons. Vivi was not defeated by anything, really, right? Everyone saw it coming, they were prepared for it, and it still crushed everyone. So now that we know Is It Lessons is a thing, is it going to be beaten? And I feel the deck will have a much harder time against Graveyard Hate, right? Like, once you don't have Ancestral Recalls firing off, like, are you really that OP? And then maybe that just brings you back to good, as opposed to, you know, like, you know, S tier.
But then Monument to Endurance kind of helps also push you over, right? Like, that is... That's a way to also burn, deal three, generate more card advantage. So sure, maybe you don't have Ancestral, like, Recall, but you kind of have this also the super draw and card filtering engine between that and Artist Talent. So it's as of right now, it looks like a really well-oiled machine where Monument to Endurance is your top end at three mana.
I will.
It's time to bring out High Noon, boys.
Yeah. Oh,
I get bounced.
I do think, man, another metagame where we need High Noon in the main deck is not necessarily a sign of health of
healthy.
The format.
Just four ley lines and four High Noon's main deck. Let's go. Abzan. We got it.
I do think, though, that the deck might be beatable. It is a little concerning that, like, somehow, no matter what we do in Standard, we just always have an Is It deck on the top of the meta. But I do think the Sultai Reanimator deck is legitimately good against that deck. I do think Dimir, honestly, based on the data we have, actually is very good against the Lesson deck. What happened to Dimir, Krim? Like, going into Worlds, going out of our last round of bannings, we were very concerned that, like, Enduring Curiosity, Kaido, do we need to pre-ban something? And it had been the most played deck overall since Avatar released in Standard. Then at this tournament, two people picked up Dimir out of the 120-some that played this event. It was basically non-existent, although those two people did do well with it in the Standard rounds. What do you think this means for Dimir going forward? Is Dimir still tier one? Like, is it still a real deck in Standard?
This tournament was a hit piece on my favorite deck, okay? This is collusion from the pros is what it is. I don't know yet. We're gonna see, right? Because like Richard had mentioned, this is just, so the world's, meta took place. Now we know what some of the front runners are. Like every mid-range deck, you kind of need to see what the meta looks like. You can build a sideboard for it. So once Dimir is firing on all cylinders and, like, prepped for it, how does it look then? right? And does anything change? Can Demir even prep for it? So I don't know, but I mean, I'm going to try to sit and like see if I can cook something with that or Jeskai, because I think those are the two decks I'll be playing through the standard season of like whatever RCs there are, RCQs that I'm going to try to go out and queue with. So I hope Demir is still good. I just don't know. My
Demir's
problem is
cooked.
Storm Chaser style.
You want to shoot the sheriff an otter token crimp? like you might as well just scoop it up, right? And then they're like, okay, boomerang, another otter. What you got, bro? Like that's why Demir went away, right? Because Steel Cutter, like you just can't keep up with the tokens with your 1-for-1 removal. And your card draw is way too slow, right? So I think as long as we have Storm Chaser's talent on the top, Demir can't really thrive, right? Unless you're going into Demir self-bounce or, you know, Esper bounce or something at this point, too.
Demir self-bounce
basically
is
do
not
the same
the play.
Thing.
Yeah, right? that's not the play.
but you're especially playing a token deck, right? You can't Demir against a token deck, right?
Well, you're somehow the clunkier deck. In Demir midrange, this deck is tops out at 3 mana only with Monument to Endurance. Then Grand Grand makes everything 1 mana. So your deck
if you have
is
a Grand
just
Grand
all
out,
mana.
You have a Legacy deck. Like your whole deck costs 1.
Oh, you have a vintage deck. Yeah. It is insane. It really is Ancestor Recall once you have the Grand Grand out. What do you make of Boomerang Basics? Like, I was thinking back. We've been in this Is It Standard for a while now, right? They had to ban Cutter, they banned Monstrous Rage, they banned Vivi, they banned Profs over the last 6 months. And one of the things they mentioned during those past ban list announcements, one of the articles, they talked about how This Town Ain't Big Enough was really problematic with Storm Chaser's talent, being able to pick it up. That's why they banned This Town Ain't Big Enough. And they specifically called out 1-mana plays and how in this new world of Standard with 3 years and more sets, we got to be super careful about these 1-mana plays and things that synergize with 1-mana plays. And then a few months later, they print Boomerang Basics, which is better This Town, arguably, that synergizes with Storm Chaser's talent. Was this a good risk? Like, what do you think happened here design-wise? Because it seems like Wizards knew about the synergy with Storm Chasers being self-bounced, being really strong, to the point where they actually banned a card 6 months ago for that, and the risk of 1-mana plays, and then we get Boomerang Basics, which is just This Town on steroids in a lot of ways.
I do actually, I know I said this before, and this card is not bad, but I do think the sorcery speed thing does change a lot, because if I go to answer something, you can't just do it, save it on my turn for cheap, right? You have to do it on your own turn. So that part of it I do like, and the one thing that I am still going to see as the meta like evolves is that like Into the Flood Maw does allow you to bounce like, let's say, High Noon at the end of my turn, whereas this is on your turn. You're like that 1 mana that you're spending could be all the difference in this cheap low to the ground deck. So I don't know. We're going to see if it is better than This Town Ain't Big Enough, but I do think it is a very strong thing, and it is funny that they have just only furthered the cheap casting, like, I don't know, the cheap spells in the meta.
Same thing. Storm Chaser's talent keeps getting better. What do you think, Richard? Was it just a mistake to print it?
I think it's a mistake. I think their whole, like, cheating mana and even things like Accumulate Wisdom, you're like, well, you need 3 cards in the graveyard. It's probably fine. Right. But then it turns out we can do this really quick with Grand Grand, like fire off like 2 removal spells and like you're already there. And then now all your spells cost 1. And like it feels real bad if they're like Grand Grand, you're like bolt. They're like otter, you're like bolt. And then they're like, okay, redraw my hand. And you just wasted all your time like lightning bolting like my dirtle pieces. And the interesting part is with Boomerang Basics, there's nothing to protect. You're not flood mawing like.
No,
you don't need to unsummon your own things, right? Because you have otter tokens and things like that. So in many ways, it actually is just straight up better than This Town, which is weird, right? Because even when they made This Town, you're like, this is the ban-worthy card? Like, it turns out it is. And this just letting you play more otters, drawing cards, keeping your hand healthy, and then pumping your otters as is, right? Because when you go turn 1 otter, Boomerang Basics, back to Stormfish Talent, another otter hit for 3. Like, that was a Delver play, and you went up cards in hand, right? Mm-hmm. And then if your opponent deals with all of it, you just level up your Storm Chaser's talent and keep going. So, I don't know. It's just this combination, and it really feels like an Eternal deck, right? Yeah. Like, The curve of this thing is so low without factoring Grand Grand. Once you factor in Grand Grand, like, the curve is, like, ridiculous, right?
So 22 and then lands.
It really, like, you really have swords to plowshares, right? Like, it's combustion technique is, like, one mana deal eight.
Yep.
Okay, right? Removes anything now, right? So, like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. So, we are just in a very, very fast standard. And then because the deck is so fast and efficient, literally everything trades down in mana tempo. Like, so what are you going to do about it, right? And the only way is to go do crazy things like Badger Mole Cub, but this gets under it, right? Yeah. Like, this gets under it, right? So I don't know.
Or play the
one mana combustion technique, kill anything. Like, it's not a good look.
Or you're back to, like, playing the narrow sideboard cards, right? You're playing the High Noons, you're playing the Rest in Pieces in the main deck, and you're like, you're back to that kind of meta. I do think maybe, I remember back with some of the past ban list updates, one of the cards people were mentioning that didn't get banned was Storm Chaser's Talent. I wonder if Wizards maybe messed up, like, 6 months ago, and maybe when they did the This Town banning or whatever, maybe that was the right card to ban at the time. Like, maybe they actually should have just banned Storm Chaser's Talent, because that might be kind of the underlying. The only thing that works against that is it wasn't even part of the VV Cauldron deck. That Dominate Izzet deck didn't even play Storm Chaser's Talent. But if you look at Cutter and now the Lesson deck, that really is the engine that keeps it going. Do you think that might have been, like, the right move 6 months ago, Krim, when they did that big ban list update? Should they just hit Storm Chaser's Talent back then?
Looking at it now,
hindsight bias,
maybe
of course,
you know. Yeah. Like, yeah, sure, maybe now, but, like, at the time, those decks that were around, like, and like you had mentioned, Vivi didn't even need it. and like, yeah. Is it probably just has another cheap card waiting in the shadows once Storm Chaser Talent is gone anyway? So I guess looking at it now, maybe leaving Storm Chaser's Talent, maybe it could have gone. I mean, it buying back the spell also, so, like, it keeps the engine going forever at the second chapter, and then, you know, you get to go to chapter 6 or chapter 3, and then you just start popping out otters everywhere. So, I don't know. Yeah, the card is very efficient and very, like, very solid.
Let me ask you one more question, and then we got to move on to some drama here in a minute, but would you sign up for this every set if you could? Like, would you sign up? Because I would say, if you look at this meta, we got the Lesson deck, completely an Avatar deck. We even had the Bant Airbending deck as, like, the second or third most played deck, even though it didn't perform well this weekend. Would you sign up for every standard set having one or two almost, like, block-constructed decks that are strong enough to compete in standard? And then the next set does that, the next set does that. And in theory, you end up with, you know, Avatar deck versus Final Fantasy deck versus an Aether Drift deck. Like, is that what they're going for? I remember, Richard, you mentioned that One Piece kind of works like that to some extent, right? Where each set has a deck or two that tends to battle against other decks from other sets. Like, do you think that's part of Wizards' goal when they move to having more sets in standard? Is that how they're going to keep things diverse and moving, is just each set gets one or two, like, almost pre-built decks and you battle them out against each other?
I mean, when
yes,
you go into,
as long as this deck doesn't, like, obliterate the existing decks, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Vivi is a quote-unquote Final Fantasy deck, but it just obliterated everything, right? But so if this new Lessons deck is a healthy 15 to 20% of the metagame, then I'm all for it, right? But if it pushes out everything, then it's not good. Like, for example, Badger Mole Cub has pushed its way into, like, every green deck, and it's pushed everything out. That's probably not good, but if we could get a Lessons deck here, and then we can get a Lorwood Eclipse deck, and then we can get a Star Trek deck, and they're actually all competitive, then I think that's the ideal, right? Because we actually have new deck lists. I know we're beaming on Izzet here, but the deck is brand new, right? Like, 98% of the cards you haven't seen played together before, right? So it's very exciting. You would hope it's cheap, but it's not. Like, you're like, is it Lessons? It's full of, like, all uncommon lessons from the latest set, right? How much is a deck? $630. Storm Chaser's Talent, Artist Talent, that's like 120 plus a playset. Monument to Endurance, another $100 playset. And then even your Boomerang Basics, they're like, Boomerang Basics
per.
And Accumulate Wisdom, they're like, you know, $3 to $5 a piece, even though they're uncommons from the latest set, right? So hopefully it's cheaper in the future, even though they're all uncommons. But, you know, theoretically, a deck of all uncommons from the latest set should be cheap, right? It should be cheaper, right?
It is also worth mentioning that it was actually cheap before the weekend. If you look at prices, like Storm Chaser's talent went from $5 up to $30. Artist talent went from like $7 up to $30. Monument to Endurance went from like $8 up to $23. So a lot of this is like people buying it out in response to this tournament. So a lot of these were like super recent price increases. But yes, it is stupid expensive now. So maybe some of those will go back down. We'll go back down in the future. What do you think, Grim? Would that be a good place for the meta to end up with just like each set having a couple of decks to battle out against each other?
I thought I was going to sneeze. Okay. I hope so that, like, you know, moving forward, right? My biggest concern is that if we go to 7 sets next year, do you think that if I said yes to this, do you think it was play tested to a way where, like Richard had mentioned, the new set doesn't just completely invalidate all the older sets? Because the last thing you want to see is like the Yu-Gi-Oh! Meta where everything is just like, okay, new set's out, all your stuff doesn't matter. Or Modern Horizons, right? Like the Modern Horizons block where all your old modern decks just essentially were gone, right? I don't want to see that. And that requires heavy hours of playtesting when it comes to every set. Do you have to also trust that that's consistent all the way through? So, and 7 sets a year is a lot, right? So, I would like to imagine where maybe, yeah, every set lessens and a new archetype is a new tier 1 contender, but also doesn't invalidate everything else. Otherwise, I'd rather err to the side of caution and just have 3 cards from the set pop in there in the top standard deck. Or maybe make slightly push up an archetype, maybe spawn a new archetype. But like, I'd rather err to the safer side in that department.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of with you guys where like, I would like that. Like, if that's where we ended up, I just don't have a ton of faith that it's possible because I feel like you're going to end up, if you try to do that and print one or two really powerful decks each set and have them battle it out, I'm afraid some of them will just be stronger than the others and do what you're saying, where they actually just invalidate a bunch of decks. And then you end up in the, we got to ban Vivi, then we got to ban Cutter, and we just like are constantly doing that cycle of having one deck that's too good. So I could see some utopia. Yeah, one is always an is it deck. I could see like some utopian standard coming out of it if everything breaks right, but I'm also afraid that it actually might make things worse instead of better. But good news is we got another set coming up in like a month and we'll see what happens, because maybe we get some more new decks out of lore Eclipse, because it's almost here, and that's how the next year is going to be, right? Just set into set into set. So any final thoughts on Worlds in general before we get to the drama? Because I got to ask you guys about a couple of specific plays from Worlds. All right, let's talk drama. So I will say I watched a lot of Worlds this weekend, and this was maybe the sloppiest Worlds that I've ever seen, just as far as people making play mistakes. Players who I know are really good at Magic just forgetting to like tick down their overlords and really stupid things that I do all the time on Arena that I wouldn't expect someone playing the top 8 of Worlds to do. So it was a sloppy tournament overall, I would say. But there was a couple of takebacks that happened, and I got to get your guys' opinion of this. So this is top 8 of Worlds. Seth Mansfield, who ended up winning the tournament, playing against Ken Yukihiro. Is it Lessons versus the Saltai Reanimator deck? Let's start with the easier of the two. So the first of these two plays involves the card I'll Quench You, the new Quench counter spell. Richard, why don't you describe how this play went down for the viewers?
All right. Cavern of Souls was played, naming Spider-Man. A Spider-Man card was played. Seth puts Quench on the battlefield. He grabs he only has 2 treasure tokens to pay Quench. Okay, so he grabs the treasure tokens and he starts moving them away. And before he's done that motion, he pulls them back and he's like, I don't do that. You name Spider, right? So, and then that was allowed. So he picks the Quench back up. The Spider-Man resolves and then play moves on. The motion was quite swift, right? It was not like the Quench goes down and then is like resolves, it can't be countered. Then he's like, I take it back, right? It was like in the process of like ditching the treasures, he realizes it and he pulls it back. I still think that's incredibly sus. That's not something I expect on the Pro Tour. People are calling like Seth a cheater and things like that. And no, right? Like the rules of the game state that you can take back. So this was all news to me, by the way, because even apparently like Marshall and Paul, everyone, they're like, you can do that? You can just take things back, right? And, like, apparently, the rules state that as long as no new information has been gained, you can take back plays, right? And in this case, you know, there was no resolves, there was no nothing. And also, there were no instants that could have been cast in response from the other player's deck. So you could just take, he could have actually, like, put the treasures in the trash or whatever, thought for a minute, and if the other player didn't, like, proceed with the game, he could have probably took it right back, which happens with Boomerang Basics in a second, right? But yeah. The rules allow for this, and the rules state, like, I was actually shocked about this. This is a 4.8? 4.8. Reversing decisions. Apparently, you can play an island before anything else happens. Say, sorry, I meant to play a swamp. That's cool. You can say, no blocks, followed by wait. I meant to block and then block. That's also cool. You can say, go, wait, land go. That works. Like, apparently, we're very lenient now in, like, competitive rel. So I don't know what this means, but as long as no new information gets gained, you're allowed to walk back decisions, which is what Seth did here. Yeah. And I will say, while all technically allowed, right, this looks so bad for the game. Like, I can't believe they let this, like, play, right? Like, sloppy play is bad enough, but, like, allowing it to play out, like, I don't get this grace playing at my RCQs, you know? Like, shit, like, apparently you're allowed to take back anything, because if you can have it at the top eight of Worlds, you can do it back in RCQ, right? But, you know, all, like, those rules lawyer stories and things like that, like, I feel this is not reflecting reality. And they need to change the rules. They need to change the rules. This looks so bad to, like, walk back a quench like that. Like, chess rules. If it hits the table, you gotta cast it, okay? Like, if you touch the piece, you gotta go. And if you want, tank on it before you slap the cardboard down, okay? Like, you can spend all the time you want, but as soon as it hits the table, you must execute it unless it's somehow straight up illegal. Like, you know, you don't have the right mana or whatever, right?
So a little backstory of how we got in this position. So the rules used to be much more like that. And then I don't know if you remember the infamous Hazoret play. It might have been Pro Tour Amonkhet or something. Yep. Where, if I'm remembering the play right, player had, like, one card in hand, drew a second card, went to combat, thought he could attack with Hazoret, couldn't attack with Hazoret because he didn't play the land first, and lost the game as a result. So after that play, they actually made all these new rules to try to soften, like, the blow, I guess, of someone who makes a mistake like that by allowing them to take it back. In that case, they would have been able to, like, rewind and make their land drop, I guess, and then attack with the Hazoret. So that's why they put these new rules in. I do agree that it just looks really bad, though. Like, if you're watching something that's supposed to be the equivalent of, like, the Super Bowl or the World Series, you don't expect people to be able to just, like, take back their plays. Although I do think the quench play under these rules, it was probably correct. I can't see how new information was gained or anything like that. So I do think it was probably the right decision based on these rules. I do wonder if these rules are correct. Krim, do you have any other thoughts on this one before we get to the second play?
I'm going to feel the same way pretty much across the board here, but, like, isn't it better to play the game than play against the, like, you know, play the rules? You know what I mean? Like, I would rather you make the correct play, the optimal play, and assuming that, you know, you haven't, like, drawn 30 cards and then, like, oh, can I take it back? I want to play a different card. That's different, right? I think that grace period's fine. I don't understand. I guess in my mind, I don't see why it's a bad look, right? Because you would rather see at the top level, right? I get it. You want people to be tight and, like, super duper, like, strict about the ruling there. But I would rather just see a good game, right? And I think a good game comes with, like, just the better play being made. And if that means you just control Z real quick, then that's fine. And that's coming from someone who has benefited from people trying to counter my Supreme Verdicts. But also, you know what I mean? Like, I would rather them just get the card back into their hand and then just, you know, do the thing that you want to do, as long as not a lot of things have happened. So
yeah, at FNM, Krim.
No, but, like, this is
a match, right?
But this was the same at our PTQs and all of that, right? Like, it's like so many people would do that, and, like, I don't know, I don't think the problem is
there's a judge's discretion in here that no new information is gained, right? So if you slap down a spell and, like, whether I react or not, like, you know, do I have a counterspell in my hand or not? The judge needs to determine whether, like, my eyebrow twitch or whatever meant that, oh, yeah, I'm relieved it resolved, or no, I was holding my counterspell. And then, you know, he pulls it back. Like, what if you just start baiting spells?
You know, like, oh, I'm gonna play my three. Well, drop out. Take it back.
That's different.
You know, was he about? But so, the judge has to sit there and like, oh, did you ascertain that a counterspell was in hand or not during that quick move? You know what I mean? Like, it starts getting very wishy washy, like quite quickly. So I'd rather it be like no room for error, right? Because now you're, you know what you're incentivized to do now, right? As soon as your opponent does something, you shout out resolves immediately. You know what I mean? Like, if your opponent was like, quench, like, resolves, right?
Yeah. Then you can't lock him into that spell.
Right? So this is like hurrying to the line to spike the ball, right? Now you're incentivizing another stupid metagame. So I'd rather just be as clear as possible, because now you got to rules shark the other way, right? Anytime your opponent does anything, lock it in as quick as tap and land. Oh, can't respond, right? Like, it starts becoming quite ridiculous, right? So just play clean.
I mean, mistakes are going to happen, right? Like, you playing clean is ideal, but like, you can't, even the pros are going to make some mistakes. I'm glad you brought up that example, Richard, because this play doesn't really concern me too much. I can get what you're saying, but I'm actually okay with them taking back the quench play. I think that was actually the right decision. But in the same match, we had another takes backsy. And this is the one that I actually have a big issue with, because I feel like this one can do exactly what Richard was saying, where lead to the ability for people to rules lawyer. So this play, same match, Seth still playing. Seth's down to like four cards in his deck, trying to figure out how to get in the last points of damage with his monument before he runs out of cards. He has a monument to Endurance out. He goes to play Boomerang Basics on his monument of Endurance, and he taps his mana. He does the whole thing. He puts the Boomerang Basics on the table. 30 seconds later, the card's sitting on the table, and like, he's reaching towards his library like he's going to draw off his artist talent. But like, full 30 seconds later, he realizes, well, if I draw off this Boomerang Basics, I'm going to mill myself out before I can actually kill my opponent. So then he stops and is like, oh, can I take this back? And worth mentioning, too, that Ken, as he played the Boomerang Basics, acknowledged that it was resolving. He said yep or something. So he knew it was resolving. But he says, can I take it back? Looks over to the judge. The judge, a few seconds later, is like, sure, you can take it back. The announcer's like, oh, my God, I can't believe you could do that. But this one I felt like was really bad, because I feel like this is abusable. Like, Ken had cards in hand, and there could have been, there was information gained by that, right? When he played the Boomerang Basics and Ken said yes, it resolves, he gained the information that Ken wasn't going to kill his thing or cast anything in response to that spell. So if that's the standard, couldn't you use that to like bait your opponent, essentially, where you play like a bad spell and wait until your opponent says it resolves, and they're like, oh, just kidding, I'm gonna put that back in my hand and play my good spell now that I know you're not gonna interact with me? Like, is that not setting up the game for people to rules lawyer and to cheat there? But I'm curious what you think about that one, because I think this was the egregious one, honestly.
I mean, I didn't see this, so I didn't watch this, but I mean, from the way you're describing it to me, that one is a little different, because you are now, If like, I'm assuming it's not on the dot 30 seconds, but some like super long amount of time, right? That is a little bit of like phishing info, right? And that, I don't know. I mean, that's a little more, I think, gray. I would like to think that at Worlds, you know what you're doing enough to where, okay, you're sitting, you've casted your spell, and before resolving everything, you know, it's like, okay, hold on, wait a minute.
And, yeah, and just he wasn't fishing for information, right?
Right.
Like, He demonstrated, he like played the Boomerang Basics, he tapped his mana, and then he like, you know, tanked, and then asked the judge if he could take it back, and then he told the judge, I casted it. You know, it's not like he was like, ah, you know, I didn't mean to cast, whatever. It's like, no, he casted it, and I want to take it back, right? So he was playing well within the rules, and he acknowledged everything correctly, right? So he's not cheating or anything, right?
No.
But the rules state you can take it back, so he took it back. Right. And it's so much easier to just be like, bro, tank hard on your decision than play the card. Don't play the card and then mid playing the card tank some more. You know what I mean? Like, why should we allow this? Right. Like, it just makes the game hard to follow and understand when the solution is really just think hard before your turn. And it's not like he's playing timed rounds either. Right. Like,
right.
You can do whatever you want. Right. So I think, you know how they like enforce the battlefield layout? You can't put your lands in front, right? Like, enforce, do all your thinking, put a card on the battlefield that stays on the battlefield, right? Like, I think they should just do that for clarity of the game rather than this ambiguous, because like, the other thing is you're also wasting your opponent's time. You put the boomerang basics on the stack. Your opponent is now thinking, like, okay, now what is the sequence of my turn? What am I doing, right? They're spending time computing when, in your mind, you haven't even done this. Are you going to take it back? And you just wasted their brain cycles as well, right? So there's, like, all kinds of, like, weird stuff that comes out of this, and I just do not see the benefit. Like, what is the benefit that you put... You put your card down too fast, like, and you can take it back? Like, well, why should we allow this, right?
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning that same rules document we were referring to earlier where it talks about how the judges can let you take back plays if no information regained. It is worth mentioning the very first sentence of that document is, players are expected to consider their options before taking an action, and players are not usually allowed to take back an action that has been communicated to their opponent, either verbally or physically. And then it goes into the, well, sometimes if you make the wrong decision but no information's gained, the judge may allow you to change your mind. So it does say that you're supposed to think it through and, you know, do that before you actually make your play. And I want to make it super clear, I don't think Seth did anything wrong. I don't think he did anything wrong. I don't think he was wrong to ask for it to be, let him replay the card and pick up his card. He did nothing wrong in this situation. But I do worry that the rule being written like this, along with just leading to weird, clunky situations where we're coming out of Worlds, this huge tournament with all these new decks, and the biggest conversations on social media are about these takebacks and not about how awesome Magic is or how great Avatar is or whatever. It's all these arguments about should you be allowed to do this. So I think that overshadowed the tournament to some extent. And I do think if this is a setup, someone less ethical could use this as like an angle shoot to try to like see if their opponent has interaction before making a spell. I don't think Seth did that, but someone could, I think, do that under these rules and potentially get away with it.
Yeah, but that makes it so much worse, right? Because now the same action taken by two different people get different outcomes. She's like, oh, this guy has like a shady background, so when he does this, I think he's angle shooting or something, right? So I'm going to disallow it. But this guy is like a Hall of Famer, whatever, you know, prestigious player, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, right? And like it sets it up so that there's potential for bias, either knowingly or unknowingly, right? There might be people that will actually engage in it, but people will just like be biased without knowing it, right? And yeah. I think, why do we need to add these things into our game, right? Like, Magic is hard enough, right? Like, just make it. And, like, I'm sure you'll learn real fast that if you put a card down, it must resolve. You'll learn real fast not to do that again, right? Yeah. So, I don't know, man. Magic's soft, Seth. We're all playing Commander now. Like, what happened to the good old days of Magic the Gathering? Right, where you can rules lawyer your way to a victory. Now they can just undo everything. Like, I don't know, Seth. I can't.
You can't even die to a pact anymore. You can't die to a pact.
Our pod is more sweaty than the top 8 of Worlds now. Like, what is going on? Like, this is just a bad look.
It is. It caught me by surprise. I was definitely not expecting to see all this going on in Worlds, like the biggest tournament with only the best players. So very, very interesting. We'll see if anything comes out of this, if Wizards actually thinks this is a problem. The other argument I heard from people is, well, because it's open deck lists, then the judge knew that Ken didn't have any counters in his hand because he didn't have any in his deck list, in his main deck. So he knew that there wasn't a counter he could play. So Seth wasn't actually gaining information there. I don't really buy that, though, because I feel like that's saying that if you get in this situation, the judge is supposed to go to your opponent and look through their hand and decide what relevant plays they could or could not make. And then isn't the judge playing the game instead of the player at that point? Like, because he did have Bitter Triumph in his hand, which he could have cast on a Gram. Would it have been a good play? Probably not, but it was a legal play that he could have made in that scenario with the cards in his deck. So I don't really buy the open deck list. Like, he knew there wasn't a counter argument. That doesn't really work for me either, personally. But anyway. Any other thoughts? Any other thoughts on any of the drama of the world stuff? All right, so let's move on. One last quick topic. This one also caught me by surprise. So Wizards announced this week, we're getting some spoilers tomorrow. I don't know why we're getting spoilers tomorrow, but we're doing early spoilers for Marvel Superhero, a set that comes out next summer sometime, I believe. So tomorrow, getting some early spoilers for Marvel Superhero. And then January 5th, we kick off Lorwyn Eclipse. Going to be a fast spoiler season for Lorwyn Eclipse because of the holidays. So it's starting a little bit later than it would for most sets. But what do you guys think? What's your hype level going into these early Marvel Superhero spoilers?
All-time low. Children's IP. Don't like it. Just don't understand. Yeah, they're just ruining the game. Yeah. Slop, slop, slop. Buzzword, buzzword, buzzword.
Yeah.
No, I'm so excited. Yeah, are you kidding me?
I know you are, Grim. I know you are.
I can't even say that with a straight face, dude. I am flipping out over here. I cannot wait. They already showed like some of the art at Vegas or whatever. Right, like, and I'm loving it. I get to see all the heroes I love, all the characters I love. Or, I mean, sorry, I got to read the room. They suck.
I even discounting their suckiness level, I do wonder. This just feels so early. We're jumping like 3-4 sets in the future for these ones in the middle of December, even though it doesn't come out for 6 months. So the sets need
to
be.
So you get to have
there.
Spoiler season twice then, because yeah, you'll forget these cards exist.
That is true.
And then when it comes to, oh, wait, we saw that already. Dope.
Oh, what about you, Richard? Are you hyped for these early spoilers?
I mean, if I put on my tinfoil hat, it's so that you save your Christmas money for Spider-Man, right? And they're going to release like some banger previews so that, you know, distributors and LGSs or whatever be like, oh, yo, this is not actually Spider-Man. This is way better. You know, like, order these, right? So that's what these early previews are for, to generate hype so that people save up their money, do the pre-orders and whatnot. Going into this, though, I'm not hyped at all. I think with Avatar, I understand what makes a good universe is beyond. And a non-fantasy world, so anything set in modern day, is going to be super problematic because you can't fill it with badger mole cubs and ostrich horses and like these chocobo things.
You know what I mean? Like the
filler fantasy elements do not exist. You get hot dog cart and city pigeon and stuff like that, right?
Sick
for Krim.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I'm the biggest X-Men fan ever, so maybe there'll be some X-Men in here. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But even then, it's just going to be like Avengers. It's going to be like the Hulk and like Iron Man and stuff. It's not going to be a full-fledged X-Men set.
I don't know.
But I want the full X-Men team, right?
Like Cable, Forge. You want like
every iteration of every X-Men team, right? Like I need just an X-Men set, but again, the set cannot be 600 legendary creatures. They need filler. And then what's the filler going to be? Like, the filler's going to be bad, right?
No. So I mean, there's going to be, you could still do dragons and all of that because that does happen in the comics. Like, dragons do show up in New York City.
But that's fringe, right? Like, that's not.
That's not fringe. That's part of the Marvel lore.
That's not what I'm thinking about when I think X-Men. You know what I mean? Like,
Sure. Maybe not X-Men, but like when you think of like Avengers, like you think about Iron Man's villains, there's dragons there. There's all the same elements that happen there, like in a fantasy world.
But they're not going to make fantasy X-Men, though, right? You can't do the X-Men set with your crossover and have it be Dragons of Tarkir with Wolverine in there or something. Like,
I can't do that. But I'm saying, but that's X-Men, right? I'm saying Avengers specifically. Also, from the artwork that we've seen, I mean, maybe there's like a one or two nods, I assume, because of some of the villains. But like, it's going to be a Marvel set. And I'm happy about that. I don't know. I mean, you could still do filler stuff like City Pigeon, and you could just make that the Badger Mole Cubs, right? You can go, Construction Worker, right? That's just another filler card, right?
Yeah, see, but I hate Construction Worker because that's just like my neighbor. I don't want that in my Magic game. That's just like a person who exists.
So you're not saying that they're magical? Because I think that they're working magic out there when they're scaling buildings.
That is true.
I don't know.
You see those pictures of them like sitting on the skyscrapers? Man, that's like terrifying. Sends a shiver down my spine. Or Cyril, it is terrifying to me, seriously. I will say, I have higher hopes for this than Spider-Man, just because I think there's going to be way more characters. So I think one of the problems I had with Spider-Man is just so many spider people, but I think there's going to be a whole bunch of different superheroes, and that's going to make it feel a little bit more diverse and more like a normal set. On the other hand, I'm still skeptical of sets set in modern, like everyday settings. So that's a part I'm a little sus of, like Richard was saying. But I do think that just having more superheroes instead of just focusing on one hopefully makes it a little bit more comprehensible than Spider-Man was, for me at least. So we'll see, though. We'll find out more about tomorrow.
So we saw in one of the promo arts, right, Doctor Strange is somewhere in the background behind, like, Nick Fury. That guy is all magical all day long, baby. So, like, if he's here, we've got to have something magical, right? Because, I mean, his villain, his whole thing is magic. And then there's probably, if you have him, then you put all of, like you put Wong, you put all, like, Clea, you put his villains, then you have other dimensions. Oh, dude, it's, okay, yeah, we'll just wait till tomorrow.
The other problem is mechanics, right? They're all going to have to share some weak, generic mechanic, right? Like, if the set is going to have three or four mechanics, how do you make a mechanic that fits, like, the Hulk while fitting Iron Man, while fitting, like, Wolverine? And then you're going to end up with web-slinging, right? You're going to end up with, like, some kind of very weak one as opposed to, like, water-bending, fire-bending, and stuff like that, right? So we'll see how they do it, but it's... I've lost a lot of faith in how they're going to do this without the backstory, right? Without the world. Like, there's not as much world building in Marvel. It's more of, like, the main characters. You know what I mean? So, and then all the characters are so distinct, and they're going to smash them together and try to slap, like, four main mechanics around them. Like, I don't see how they're going to do it. I don't see how they're going to do it.
I hope they forget the mechanic thing and just do it like a Modern Horizon set or something, or like a Time Spiral set where you just like have 50 mechanics in there, make a different one for each superhero, and just
my
like,
limited environment, Seth. You're gonna tank limited for this one.
I actually started playing a lot of limited weekend, and it's kind of awesome. it might be pick two, actually. Is it a small? I can't remember if it's a small set or not, or if they've even announced that yet.
I don't even know. So, like, the main thing is, like, yeah, we'll see. I'm obviously excited. So.
We'll find out. We'll find out more tomorrow. But let's get to
Want just generic fantasy every day.
I don't even care about it being fantasy or generic. I just don't want it set in modern everyday times. That's for me the bridge that I can't get across. If it's modern everyday stuff, I don't like it. But like, it can be Duskmourne, it can be whatever. Like, that's fine. It doesn't have to be any sort of high fantasy. I don't really care about high fantasy either. So
I don't know what New York City you're seeing that has, like, you know, Kang coming in and MODOK and all of these, like, but you know, hey,
it's not that. It's
we gotta get like a space arc or like the Savage Land or something. Like, you gotta get it outside of New York City.
I mean, there's a lot of worlds to go to, so yeah, we'll see.
Anyway, let's wrap things up with a fish mail today. So this one comes from At The Only Way, says, Path to Exile hasn't been good enough for modern for years. Is it still too good for standard? So we were talking last week about maybe standard could use better removal. Is that part of what standard, you know, needs? What do you think about Path? Would Path actually be too good for standard? I honestly lean towards no. I have found that Path, like, giving your opponent a land is really, really bad. And I feel like just ramping your opponent, yeah, you'd play it out of necessity because it's one mana and it's, like, efficient. But I still think it would be probably fine in standard. But I'm curious what you guys think. Is Path too good for standard?
I'm just thinking, like, is it splash white now so that they can have the best removal spell? Would they need it? That is my only concern. But the one thing that is cool is... Path now opens you up to doing the, you know, the trick of pathing your own thing to ramp,
yeah, ramp
as well.
Spell.
I think it's still too good. Yeah, it's still too good. If we didn't like cut down, I think this is too good, right? So just in theory, it sounds great, but in play, I think it's going to be still too strong.
Mm. What about you, Richard? Tiebreaker.
It was always complete trash, Seth. Even when people played it in modern. It was complete trash, and people were just coping so hard. Like, you cannot give your opponent a land, right? So it was like a suspend 3 card. It was like Sarah Avenger, Swords to Plowshare. If you played it on turns 1, 2, or 3, you insta-lost the game, yeah, right? Yeah. So you have to hold out and play it on turn 4 when the land actually doesn't matter. Even then, it matters sometimes, right? But if they're like... Birds of Paradise, you're like turn 1 Path. You're like, okay, bro, right? Like, what are you doing, right? Like, it is so bad that I'm shocked that Crim still thinks it's good. It would not be playable in standard. And the only people that would play it are combo decks that are just looking to live like one turn and going over the top of you, right?
No.
But like, you would never play it in a fair deck at all.
No.
Like, you cannot spot your mana. Oh. You cannot spot your opponent one full land on the early turns of the game. No way, right?
What if
control decks would play it?
I'm thinking of the versatility in it that, yes, okay, obviously I'm not going to path your birds, but what if I What if I make a fish token and path my own fish token, right? Like be in a dead matchup.
This is the commander class podcast argument.
No. Like,
it's a random,
I guess. This is a real ability, though, that is in standard where it does matter, right? Like getting that land and ramping yourself actually is better here.
That's true.
And in a world of like four color control and like that, or at least maybe before worlds, and if you inevitable defeat me, I'm going to get. Instead of losing three, I'm just going to ramp myself here, right?
But do you see how you're actively trying to 2-for-1 yourself to ramp, and if you use it in its normal removal mode, that's what you're gifting your opponent. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like you're going down a card, right? You're going down a mana, and you're doing the ramp, which you are happy to sack your own fish to do, right? So like that's how bad it is to path your opponent's creature, right?
It still is one mana get anything though. Yeah, it would see play.
One mana exile.
It will see play because people are bad. But like just one mana combustion technique kill anything. What does it matter? Exiles too.
Plus if you don't like the target, you can always just take it back, right? So it's no downside there, yeah.
I was like, do you still have a planes in your deck? Let me see. Oh, you do? I take it back.
Anyway, Richard, how do people send in fish mail for next week?
All right, hit us up at MTG Goldfish with the hashtag MTGFishMail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And I believe that brings us to the end of episode 565 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So, Richard Krim, thanks for hanging out. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about early Marvel spoilers and whatever else goes on in the world of Magic. So, until then, have an amazing week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.